Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking to our regular guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today on the show. Michelle Reinen back with us. She's the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, welcome back. And Laura Sutherland, our guest as well. She's the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura, good to see you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us. Good morning.
We'll be talking about the scams that are most common right now, and we'll also answer your questions as well. Do you have a consumer concern? I hope you'll join in. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Michelle, let's turn to you first. The FTC recently opened up a claims process for consumers who were victimized by fraudulent MoneyGram transfers. And maybe for those unfamiliar with it, what's a MoneyGram to start?
Yeah, MoneyGram is just a company that does wire transfers for consumers. So when they're trying to transfer money by wiring it. And we saw a similar settlement with another company years ago. And now the FTC has reached a settlement agreement with MoneyGram. And so consumers who lost money to scammers between January 1st of 2013. So we are going back a ways.
Way back.
And December 31st of 2017, while using MoneyGram to, transmit and wire transfer that money to the scammers, can now file a claim to get their money back. So the claims process results from a $125 million settlement between the Federal Trade Commission, U.S. Department of Justice, and MoneyGram after previous agreements with the government to crack down on fraudulent money transfers were violated. So this is, again, a continuation of previous agreements. And consumers who lost money to a scammer by using MoneyGram between that 2013 and 2017 period should file a claim to receive a check. And what consumers need to know about this process is that in February of this year, 2021, pre-filled forms, hard to say, were mailed to victims who'd already been identified through this investigation process. But beginning June 1st, so just a couple of days ago, people who did not receive that pre-filled form but were victimized through MoneyGram can file claims online or obtain a paper claim form. And it's referred to as a petition at the federal level by going to this website. It's www.moneygramremission.com. So MoneyGram, MoneyGram. remission.com, MoneyGramRemission.com. Consumers need to know, this is important because we talk about it on the show all the time, that a Social Security number will be required for claimants to file. And any debt owed to the federal government would be deducted from any claims payment made to that consumer. And additionally, a MoneyGram money transfer control number, or known as an MTCN. So this MoneyGram money transfer control number, it's an 8-digit number assigned to each MoneyGram money transfer, but it's listed on these receipts and completed send forms that MoneyGram has. They need that because it will show what transaction and what was involved in that loss. And then finally, you have until August 31st. All claims have to be submitted by August 31st of this year. So people have some time, but it's one of those things. Don't put it on the back burner because time runs away from you, and we probably won't do reminders with you and your show till August, and then you'll be short on time. So, you know, if you've used MoneyGram and it was a scam, now's the time to just go to that MoneyGramRemission.com site, fill out those forms, or get them sent to you and get that claims process going.
And you need to have some proof, or you need to have saved the information.
Yeah, you're going to need that MoneyGram money transfer control number there, that 8-digit number as part of it. You know, if a consumer has some other form of proof, I'd still encourage them in some way, shape, or form to file a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission about this and that they don't have that. You know, if they didn't get the pre-filled form, or even with DadCap's consumer protection. So there may be some alternative or assistance that can be done if you don't have that, but you have complete recollection or some financial documentation that shows the amounts that were lost. There may be alternatives. This is the straightforward, what's required method to be part of this claims process, but there may be some alternatives.
I want to turn, and before we go back to the phones, I wanted to turn to the cryptocurrency scams and how are consumers taking advantage of it's an emerging market, I think, isn't it, Barra?
It is. It's becoming very popular, and it's driving more and more people to consider these investment opportunities. As we know, Elon Musk was at the center of them. And then there was the whole issue with Robinhood. And it's quite alluring to the younger investor, too. So one of the reasons that we're talking about it, because they find this compelling, and many of them are being scammed. So the FTC's Consumer Sentinel, which is the FTC's mechanism for tracking scam reports, they indicated from October 2020, there were 7,000 people nearly that have reported losses because of cryptocurrency scams, totaling more than $80 million. So that's a lot of money since October of last year, right? So what do these scams look like? The websites are designed to look like legitimate investing in or mining cryptocurrency sites, but many of them can be bogus. Some offer investment tiers, like Ponzi schemes. Those are the ones that you should be particularly concerned about if you're asking to recruit other people in order to participate in the program. Those are very likely to be scams. And also, those are the ones that the younger people are tending to engage in, because there's the promise of the more they do, the more money they're going to make. There's also scams around cryptocurrencies, giveaway scams, we call them. They appear to be sponsored by a celebrity or somebody that you may know to give them the air of legitimacy. These scams can promise to immediately multiply the cryptocurrency you send, but really they're just there to steal your tracking numbers. So watch for offers that seem to be too good to be true. You know, it's interesting. Cryptocurrency is relatively new. The scams are burgeoning, but they look like the scams we talk about all the time, Larry. You got to do it really fast. You got to do it. You know, there's no time to actually investigate, and it's too good to be true. Online dating has even become a way in which to draw people into these cryptocurrency investment scams. And again, we talk about online dating scams all of the time. So watch for love interests that start chatting to you more about a hot cryptocurrency than you know, maybe your favorite Netflix show. I don't know. But there's a lot about trying to avoid these scams. You can go to the FTC's website. There's some really good information there. If you think you've been a victim of them, you know, give us a call at our 1-800-422-7128, and we can work with you on that.
Good information from Michelle and Laura to get the show going here. And I see we have a number of callers online. So Let's go to the phones. Leisha in Spring Green, we'll go to you. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I want to know who I should forward this email to. I got this long, creepy email from somebody named, she calls herself Mrs. Imelda. She says, I'm Mrs. Imelda S. Lopez. I'm a U.S. citizen, 53 years old. I reside here in Iowa, United States. And she says she's in Des Moines. And it all has to do with she took part in the compensation in Nigeria many years ago, and they refused to pay me. I had paid over $40,000 while in the U.S. trying to get my payment, all to no avail. And so she's trying to tell me that I can go through this barrister George Alex in Nigeria to get my compensation. Why I would do that, I have no idea. But anyway, so I have an email for him, and Barrister George Alex, and it tells you all the information that you're supposed to fill out, and all you have to do is pay $370.
Yeah, this is sounding kind of familiar, Leisha. A comment from one of our guests here. Michelle, sure. Do you want to take that?
Yeah, that's fine, Larry. This is... we laugh when this one pops back up, but people can still fall victim to it because the Nigerian prince scam, if you will, was one of the first really email type scams that circulated, and it has held steady over the years, certainly, but people recognize it now, and I'm so glad Leisha did recognize it and noticed it and wants to submit that to us to know that it's still circulating and see who may be circulating it. So you can certainly take and file a complaint with Consumer Protection online. It will allow you to upload a copy of the email, and it will have that information there. And we're going to end up forwarding that or submitting that to the Federal Trade Commission and other national partners so they can see the larger aspect of that, given the nature of that scam and its longevity. So, you know, be prepared for that communication from the department as it relates to what will be done with that scam. But it's good to remind people it exists and to either just delete it, you know, throw it in that junk box and get it deleted, or, you know, submit it to Consumer Protection so we know it's still circulating, where it's circulating, and can make sure it gets to our national partners.
And to send it to you?
Yep. So the website, if you want to just go online and file it that way and upload the complaint, the email after you submit the complaint, is datcp.wi.gov. So it's the department initials for Department of Agriculture, Trade, Consumer Protection, .wi.gov. Or if that doesn't work, call the hotline at 1-800-422-7128. They can mail you out a complaint form, and you just need to submit that printed copy of the email then.
Leisha, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Laura in Grand Marsh, your turn now. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to find out when it is appropriate for us to actually let you know about certain scams and things. Tuesday, within an hour, I got four calls telling me the same thing. It said that there's a warrant in your name, and you must reply to this call. Please press 1. And so on each of those four, I got different telephone numbers. And so when the last fourth one, I pressed 1 because I wanted to tell them, take me off your list. And I just said to her, do you want me to contact Consumer Protection on this call? And she goes, what? I says, well, I know this is a scam, and she hung up. So should we record those numbers and get them to you, or just forget it?
Well, Laura, my name's Laura. So first of all, lovely first name. Listen, I really think that we would appreciate if you sent those numbers in. I think it's difficult, obviously, because we are getting so many of these calls now. I mean, the numbers since 2019 in robocalls have skyrocketed. And well, the numbers haven't gone up, but the people actually being scammed have gone up, unfortunately. So the more information we have about the folks who are scamming, the better off we are. And let me say a little bit about that. When you file a complaint with the department, these numbers are, and you have the numbers, these numbers are passed on to the FTC. And the FTC, along with its federal partners, does aggregate phone numbers and allows them to determine where they're originating in some instances, and they can do investigations and enforcement because these are illegal calls. It takes a lot of resources, but the more information we have about the types of calls and where they're coming, the better off we are. But that puts the onus on consumers to actually track the calls, track the numbers, and give us a call and file a complaint. So if you're willing to do all of that, we would really, really appreciate it. In terms of pressing the number one to get off their list, that's obviously part of the scam. So now many of these calls have a 1-800 number and have an automated message, and then they tell you press one if you want to be removed. Unfortunately, you should not press one. You shouldn't engage at all. If you can avoid answering, that would be best. But if you do answer, you should not press the number because it's not to remove you. It's just to engage with you further and make sure they have a live line and try to engage with you further. So we discourage that. But yes, if you're willing to file a complaint, that would be terrific.
And thanks very much for calling, Laura. Appreciate it very much. Talking about consumer protection issues today with Michelle Ryan and Laura Sutherland from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Jill Nadeau, our producer, on-air producer today. Jane Rotunda, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer protection issues, consumer scams, with our two guests from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland. Join in with your own questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org and love to hear from you. Let's take another call. Janet in Mequonago, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Last week I had two phone calls, one at 10:15 at night and one at 11:20. And it said it was We Energies informing me that my power had been restored, but I never lost power. The second one said there are 10,000 people without power. I still had power. I hung up. I don't know. A friend told me this is a scam that's going on throughout the country. It says it's not We Energies.
What do you think? Michelle, you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, so I will be honest with you, Janet, that I have not heard of that specific twist to the scam because it sounds like it was an automated information call, which, you know, can happen with law enforcement when they need to notify a particular area of a municipality or a school for some emergency outbound automated call situation that's relevant to people's well-being. And power outages can be something. We certainly have heard of utility scam calls where it is automated that you are delinquent in your bill. You need to notify us, or it could be a live call where you need to make payment right now by providing your personal financial information, wiring money, paying by gift card, or they will do an immediate disconnection, send the truck out right away. That's the utility scam call that we typically hear about the most. And unfortunately, We Energies is the leading name that is used most often for this imposter scam, but there's usually a demand for personal information and or financial information and payment in a very urgent, demanding way. But I wonder if you were on the cusp of a region, you know, and they didn't know who was all involved in a potential outage. It's pretty late for them to do notification if it was the PM hours I think you indicated. But I do know that other utility companies, such as cable companies and stuff, do those notification back when outages are repaired and restored through automated calling systems. So since they didn't ask you to press any buttons, notify them, make a payment, or hand over any information, part of me says you were just within probably on the edge of a zone and they weren't sure who was all impacted.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks so much for that call. Appreciate it very much. And a listener email that a family member was scammed through a MoneyGram sending money to a lady who somehow had money in oil in Africa. They lost around $50,000 and the listener didn't know about it until it was too late. He never got anything back. Obviously, he's not sure he has any receipts of proof of the money sent. Is there any chance he can get anything back in this case? Michelle.
Yeah, that's going to be tough to know for certain because they have their procedure identified for consumers, the time period that's involved in this, and the information you need to provide on that form. But, you know, as I stated at the end of all that criteria, if someone was involved in impact outside this window of time, the January 1st, 2013 to December 31 of 2017, may not have that MoneyGram money transfer control number, I wouldn't let that stop them from filing a complaint that we can get to the Federal Trade Commission, because there may be a means of, you know, a third phase of trying to include others, or maybe through their investigation and settlement, we'll have a grouping of individuals that they can show through MoneyGram records that were involved. And they may also want to know about transactions and activities outside that window after, you know, different conduct continuing based on the settlement. So, you know, at least file a complaint, but I just want to keep expectations, I guess, in check about the potential of recovering that funds.
Thanks very much for that email. Let's take another call. Maureen in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Maureen.
Hi there. Thank you for answering questions on the air. Mine is there I keep getting an automated call that says there's a deadline coming up for a Medicare cancer genetic screening test, and I just hang up. I don't know if it's real or is that a fake one.
Hmm. What do you think?
I think it's a fake one. If it's an automated call and you aren't anticipating the need for that, that's a fake call. And it's sort of the perfect storm of those kind of calls, right? It invokes Medicare, it invokes your health, a cancer screening. Those are the kinds of things that really get people concerned and respond. If you have any issues that you think that are relevant to the caller, then I would call your healthcare provider about that, or I would call a known number for Medicare that you can independently check. Anytime you get a call that seems marginally legitimate, which is what all scammers do, they try to link into something that you might think is accurate and legitimate, you should use the independent source of information to check and verify. You should not use the number that they leave you, nor should you engage in the call that comes in. But that one is certainly sounds like a scam. So I would avoid picking it up next time. And I'm glad you didn't fall for it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's take another call. Audie in Appleton, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment about the cryptocurrency scams going on. There's a lot of people offering services to, like, recover your crypto, but they're just another scam. They're like hackers who say, hey, I can hack them or get into your computer if you give me access and recover your cryptocurrency. But it's just another scam to scam you if you've already been scammed again, you know. So don't fall for that. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Oh, man.
Yeah,
there's so many ways.
It's really a big issue, Larry. I mean, particularly, as I say, for the younger people, I gave you that number at the top of the hour of $80 million being lost. Well, $35 million of that was people between 20 and 30 years old, and they don't normally have that kind of money. So it's really a big issue for folks, that tension between you need to act really quickly, but you're going to lose out on this big win, and this idea that you need to do your own homework and determine whether or not you're being taken advantage of. So I appreciate that caller flagging that it's not only on the front end of the scam, but also on the back end that they're trying to get you coming and going.
Oh, man. Oh, thanks again, Audie. That's good information. Henry in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Henry.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got one that I don't know if anybody's talked about. I just came in on the conversation. I got a phone call from two people. I knew both people. One of them was not in my contact list on my cell phone. The other was in my contact list on my cell phone. They both told me that I had called them, left a voicemail, and told them to call me back. The one that I talked to that was in my contact list said, it was exactly your voice. What is going on? I mean, did they call my phone, you know, get my voicemail and play it back to them? You know, my fear is that people who know me might say, oh, well, that's him. I really need to call him back. And then they get this fake, you know, person on the phone and get talked into something.
Wow. Michelle, what do you think?
You know, that is a new one that I have not heard of before, Henry. One thing I would potentially do is talk to your carrier. See if they have any information about about being hijacked in any way, and see if they can do anything with your call history to see if there's been any kind of manipulation there. I'm assuming it was, and maybe I shouldn't, but that it was like a smartphone or a cell phone, since you talk about contactless versus a voice over internet protocol system that was used. So the hijacking of that would be a little different, but still completely possible and relevant. And I'm just, it's so different of a scam, because there'd need to be voice manipulation and recording aspects to that, and to use your individuals you've known. It seems a little bit more pinpointed of a situation than a broad cast a net scam that we normally talk about, a phishing attempt. So the second thing I would do, just for complete sleep well at night reasons, is I would probably run a credit report check, just to see, just check out your credit report, make sure there isn't anything suspicious or different going on there as it would relate to identity theft. And be sure there's no manipulation of that happening. So you can do that by ordering one of your three credit reports, but they're also free online to be doing it regularly right now, until I think it's April of 2022, that you can go ahead and check it outside of the regular annual three that you would get.
Good luck, Henry. Thank you so much for calling. Michelle in Cedarburg, we go to you now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is how to reduce the amount of spam calls I get. And the reason I'm curious about this is because my phone has the option to block numbers or to report them as spam. And I usually do that every time, but it doesn't seem that it's actually ultimately affecting or reducing the amount of traffic from those types of scams that I'm receiving. So if that doesn't work, how does one actually go about reducing the amount of robocalls they get?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. And one that's really hard to answer. What I would say is a couple things. Blocking them as you do, not answering them, making sure you don't answer them. Eliminate giving out your phone number. I mean, I don't know if this is too late, but for me, I have a landline that I use for all phone, all applications, and I don't answer it. And I will tell you, because I don't answer it, I don't get any scam calls on it. So I use my cell phone for very limited purposes. Beyond that, there are apps out there, one of which we talk about a fair amount on the show, called Nomo Robo. And that is an app that allows you, I think it's free, but there's also an enhanced version that you can pay a little bit more for. And that does the screening for the calls for you. And our understanding is the app has good ratings and it does impact the number of calls that come in. There is, you know, it's also worth calling your carrier just to check to see if there's anything else that you could be doing. We also have mentioned on the show that the federal government passed a law called the TRACED Act, T-R-A-C-E-D, in late 2019 that was deployed in the for the first 6 months of 2020. And that act did a number of things, more resources for investigation and things of that nature. But one of the main things it did was mandate that carriers have software that that allows them to determine whether the legitimacy of a phone number, authenticate the number that's coming in. And again, this is a technology issue, so they have software that can do this, but it's only as good as the current technology. So it's not foolproof, but it should have had an impact on what's coming in. So I don't know who your carrier is. So the two things I would suggest beyond not answering and doing what you're already doing is getting an app and calling your carrier and seeing if that helps.
Yeah. Good luck, Mitchell. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Jenny in Madison next. Hi, Jenny.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to just do a consumer warning about you can buy things on Facebook. They have Facebook Marketplace now, and it's sort of like a replacement, not a replacement, but like Craigslist, where you can go to someone in your neighborhood and buy a rake or something like that. But they also now have added where you can have things shipped to you. And so I was scammed because I bought something really cheap, a $10 charging cord for my phone, and I never got it. And then I went back and the seller doesn't exist anymore. And what I learned was there's no mechanism to get your money back at all. I looked online and there's a lot of people who are complaining because they spent hundreds of dollars to have something, you know, they bought something and then they wanted it shipped and then it never arrived. And the same thing happened to them, but it's a lot more money at stake. And I don't know if you've ever tried to get a hold of Facebook for anything, but you can't. There's no customer service. There's no way to contact anyone. The only thing you can do is report the seller, press a button to report the seller. Well, if they don't exist, that doesn't do anything. So I just wanted to sort of put that out there that, just to be careful. I wouldn't, if you buy something on eBay and you don't receive it, there's a whole mechanism to get your money back and complain. But if you, this is just sort of like the netherworld of you're not getting your money back if you try to get something shipped from a scammer.
Yeah, Jenny, thanks so much. Michelle, a comment.
Yeah, I'm glad she brought this up. It's something we've tried to start talking about more and more, and that's these third-party vendors that use really well-known platforms to help solicit their goods. And with the massive increase of people shopping online, we've certainly seen more complaints from these third-party vendors, if you will. And so some cautionary tips, I guess, for individuals in relation to these things is, while you may be on a platform that you know and potentially trust, you really need to pay attention to the details to see if you are actually interacting with that primary vendor or if you might be actually interacting with the third party vendor and they're just using this platform to sell their goods. So do the research. She talked about the comparison of another platform where there is a return policy or an appeals or complaint process to try and get that refund. Know about the platform you're using to see what those policies are and if they apply to those third-party vendors so you can get your money back or at least appeal the situation and then be comfortable with that. Things we've seen happen is that goods can come from overseas, so there can be massive delays. Disclosures may be pretty minimal, so you might think based on the picture that you're getting material or 6 feet, so you need to pay attention to information provided there. That third party may not provide refunds or returns, or maybe they never deliver the product, and because they have no contact information, you can't follow with that. So you need to do your research, look at those specifics. And the final thing we've seen is that there's just flat out imposters. So some of these use these primary platforms, open a third party vendor, act as a third party, but they're just impersonating another company, trying to do what we've talked about regularly, act like them, but they are not them. They're just there to get your information and money. So it is a real thing that people need to be paying attention to when they're shopping online.
Jenny, thanks again. Appreciate it. Let's go to Don in Madison next. Hi, Don.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm calling about these spam alerts or scam alerts. Are you familiar with them?
Well, could you describe what?
Yeah, what you mean? They appear on the landline, and you don't want to answer it because it's a spam or a scam alert. And apparently, what some of the phone companies do is, if there's a robocall, they send it out to you as a spam or a scam alert. And when we were waiting for our call to get the vaccine, sometimes it came in as a spam alert. And one time I did pick it up, and I'm glad I did because I was able to then get a vaccination. What can you say about that? I'll take the answer off the line.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Michelle?
Yeah, so this is a result of what Laura talked about a little bit ago, the 2019 TRACED Act that passed, where carriers have a responsibility to try and authenticate the information that's coming through, that it's with a known, well-trusted party and tied to a company and things. And if they run suspect, they have the ability to just, if they can't authenticate, they have the ability to block the call. But the other thing that they have started doing for consumers is to put an alert out there to advise you in advance that this is likely or potentially a spam or scam call, and they've labeled it differently. Mine says scam likely. Some say scam alert or spam. You've seen different verbiage that is available. And you have an opportunity then to make a decision. You might recognize that number or that exchange, and maybe it's being spoofed, but it might also be that call you've been waiting for that isn't in your contacts, isn't likely to call you, is a temporary number someone has set up, which is what I'm wondering with the vaccine call he was waiting for, that the provider may have set up some temporary phone numbers because of the influx in calls they needed to make, that the carrier then recognized it as a potential scam alert. But these are there to help minimize consumers falling victim to things that are likely a scam based on methodology used by the carrier.
Hmm. Don, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Looking at consumer scam issues today with our two representatives from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scam issues with Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them back. Thanks for joining us. You can email us, by the way, with your own questions or comments at ideas at WPR.org, or you can call us at 800-347-9056. Sorry, 1-800-347-9056. Let's take another call. John in Mequon, your turn. Hi, John.
Well, good afternoon. I really appreciate the efforts that the Consumer Protection does for all of us. And my hat is tipped to both of you and your department. Now, I am calling on to get advice on how I should proceed about reporting a scam. And this is involving Facebook again. My spouse had saw a notice on Facebook about a well-known CNN personality making some claim. And then she clicked on it, and I said, look at this. I looked at it, and it was regarding CBD oil. And you scroll down on this very official-looking CNN site, and there's celebrity pictures all saying how wonderful this was, and free trial bottle can be sent to you. Well, I did send in for that, and there was a little...
Oh, unfortunately, we lost our caller there. Now, maybe he'll call back and we can pick this up again, because I'm not sure where quite where he was going with it. So we'll just have to go on to Margaret in Elgin, Illinois. Margaret, hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I'm calling. I need to turn the radio off now. I'm calling because our minister has told us in the Episcopal Church I go to that he will never ask for money this way. And he's warned us because we got an email from him, supposedly, using his email address, asking 8 church women that we needed $500 each to make our budget goal. Several weeks later, I got a call. It sounded very much like Don's voice. And it was saying, I really need a personal errand done today. Would you please call me? And I thought, no, that's not Don. I recognize his voice. So this is very serious. They're using pastors, and they're using something with voice recognition. And I'll sign off, and you can react to that. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Michelle, comment?
Yeah, unfortunately... scammers are pretty savvy in that they put some good efforts into their scams here, and they understand who trusted sources of information and trusted leaders are, that individuals will fulfill those types of requests. And it sounds like it is a combination of two different types of phishing scams, one by email, where we've seen this in business quite a bit, where an email will come from maybe the CEO to one of the employees saying, hey, go, it'll look like it's the CEO because it's being impersonated. And they'll say, hey, go get me some gift cards for XYZ purpose, and then give me the information and PIN numbers so I can provide those. When really it's just that scammer who's hijacked that email, who's spoofing that email. And if you look really close, you need to be careful in doing so. You can usually hover over and examine that the email is not truly coming from the name that it looks like and appears to be coming from. And then with the phone call, if they've at all engaged in that email, responded, or if the scammers are targeting a specific group, maybe they have a phone list from the ministry online or something, and they're targeting a particular area, they can now start making calls to that membership and follow up with a second stage of a scam to ask them and trying to get more financial information or money from them. So this is great. I'm glad the minister put a message out to his congregation to be sure they all knew that this isn't the normal method. But this is something important to really pay attention to and know what the regular methodology is for requests and report these types of situations, because these are scams and fraudsters behind this work.
Yeah, so they should file a complaint. Margaret or others maybe should be filing a complaint with you then.
Yeah, they can. Certainly. The thing is if this is a targeted thing where the full congregation is being targeted and it's very pinpointed in nature, they may also want to contact their local law enforcement because it is impacting the community as a whole, and they may be able to put some investigative methods and steps behind that target working with their law enforcement partners. So, talk to your community when something like this happens, as the minister did, see the breadth of how large the scam may be and react accordingly. But if you want to file with Consumer Protection, we'll report it so it's on the national radar. You can do so at datcp.wi.gov.
And thanks again, Margaret, for calling. Joe in Lake Mills, your turn now. Hi, Joe.
There he is. This is Joe in Lake Halley, actually.
Oh, Lake Halley. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to comment, as someone who does business on the phone quite a bit, I have rental properties. The problem with telling people not to answer the phone is it causes a great impediment to people that are trying to do legitimate business. You can't get anybody to answer the phone anymore. They see a number they don't recognize, and they automatically think it's a scam. So I don't know if a guest want to comment on that point of view.
Sure.
I think,
Laura?
Yeah, I feel your pain, and I think that's right. There are a lot of legitimate businesses that want to use the phone as a legitimate form of telemarketing and selling, and it is frustrating. I think what I know we do in combination with telling folks to avoid call numbers that they don't know is that if it's a legitimate request, someone's going to leave a voicemail. And that just gives them the opportunity to get the voicemail, do the vetting themselves, and make sure that it is an actual person. Because as you heard from the previous caller, these are getting more and more sophisticated. There's the spoofing of emails and the spoofing of phone numbers and the spoofing of voices. And it's really, really difficult for people to ascertain in an instant whether or not there's an accurate, a legitimate request being made. And so, but the option to leave a voicemail would be a good way to respond to that. So I understand the concern it may have on businesses.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. John in Mequon, you're back. Hi. What's on your mind?
I'm back. Okay, I'll continue the story. So on comes a blurb on Facebook about a well-known CNN personality. And so my wife showed me the click or the full screen. It looked like CNN. He was promoting CBD oil. I scrolled down and other personalities had glowing things to say about it. Clicked on the button and signed up for free bottle. And I got the free bottle in the mail. What I didn't click on was the little full details button. So I got the bottle, no instructions involved in that package. And then all of a sudden, another ad comes up on Facebook from a well-known HBO personality that made a claim, oh, I love CBD oil, I'm going to quit my job. So I researched that in another window. Saw it was false, and then I went down and I read I was in a hurry, I read the details. And oh my Lord, it was at least four pages as I scrolled down to read the legalese of what I agreed to. And it was ironclad for a three-year contract at $95 a month of getting these pills. And who knows if they're real or not. And the company was different. So there are someone is calling these CBD oil companies different companies and really spoofing well-made screens with falsehoods about personalities. And luckily I took pictures of it. So do I go through you for a complaint, or is this something more federal, or is Facebook, are they going to respond?
Laura, what do you think?
I would definitely file a complaint with the department. I mean, you've clicked a lot of boxes. The sale of CBD is also pretty heavily regulated in the state. So it would be interesting to see where it's coming from, who the seller is, and then any sort of deceptive marketing, even if a contract is ironclad, if you're lured into it with deceptive marketing or the marketing is inconsistent with the contract, that would also be an actionable violation under Wisconsin law. I'm not suggesting that that's the case here, but it certainly is worth looking into. So definitely give us a call or file a complaint on our website and let us take a look at it. And then if we think there are other places you can go, I mean, I would file a complaint with Facebook. As we've heard from a previous caller that the efficacy of that is in doubt. But certainly is putting Facebook on alert that there are fraudulent sellers or could be fraudulent sellers on their platform is important. But do give us a complaint at dhtcp.wi.gov. You can file a complaint right on our website. And thanks for calling with that information.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Lara Sutherland is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, of course, both within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They are going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And in the meantime, you can give a call, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org and voice your question or tell us what happened. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about consumer issues with our guest from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Lara Sutherland, Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, who is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor within the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Our lines are all filled right now. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org or phone at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Before we go back to the phones, I did want to mention another scam involving medical billing. That apparently is on the rise as well. And maybe I was looking at some of the examples and they're terrible. Lara, do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yes, I do. Thanks for flagging that, Larry. So we unfortunately are seeing a rise in complaints about medical billing, and it probably doesn't come as a surprise to anyone because more and more consumers are supposed to understand their medical services and their bills and ascertain what they want and what they don't want. And so consumers are asking questions about what's being billed. And so when they get these bills in the mail and they're not what they thought, they complain to us. And we appreciate that. We don't always have the jurisdiction to address it, but we often can help mediate those complaints with the healthcare provider, and oftentimes it's a miscommunication. So calling us and having us work through that with you can be helpful to both the healthcare provider and the consumer. So do that. A couple of examples that really hit home to our staff this last month was one around urgent care. So urgent care is obviously billed differently than emergency care. And oftentimes, if you're out of state, you're going to go and look for if you have an urgent care need, you're going to look online and see where can I get urgent care because my child is sick or something to that effect. And you have insurance that will cover that or it will get coded different or get paid differently. And that's what a family from Tennessee did. They were visiting Wisconsin and they went online. Their 3-year-old was sick and they needed medical attention quickly, and their family private insurance covered urgent care treatment out of state. So they went online and looked for an urgent care center and went in. Well, lo and behold, they got the care that they needed. It was marked as urgent care, but they ended up getting billed as emergency care, which is obviously an entirely different beast when it comes to billing and coding and money. And so the department is taking a look at that to see how whether or not there was some deception there or misrepresentation that led the consumer to think they were in an urgent care setting when in fact they weren't. Another common issue we're seeing is around some of these sort of routine procedures that some of us older folks get, and one of them being a colonoscopy. This consumer called, they were getting a regular colonoscopy, which many 50-year-olds get as a matter of course, for screening to see if you have colon cancer. And lo and behold, this consumer had polyps removed, and post colonoscopy, the procedure was changed from a screening procedure to a diagnostic one, which costs more money. And so we aren't sure about the outcome of that as of yet, but these are ways in which billing is complicated for consumers. Consumers are doing what they can to inform themselves and make the right medical choices, but they also often don't have all the information to make those choices and end up getting billed in ways that that could be a violation of our consumer protection laws, because if you are deceptive in your marketing, even in the context of billing, that can be a violation. So these are just a couple of examples that we've seen recently and we're taking a look at.
So if somebody has an issue, it's a good idea to get a hold of you, either online, file a complaint, or call, I would guess. So online, again, it's datcp.wi.gov. Or the number 800-422-7128. Kind of sad situations there. Well, let's take an email. A listener emailed that iPhone has a setting that will block any calls that are not in your contact list. If someone does call that's not in your contacts, they can leave a message. He gets virtually no phone calls from scammers because they immediately go into voicemail and the phone doesn't even ring. So something, if you've got an iPhone, take a look for that setting. And I've got to look that setting up. As a matter of fact, I have not used it, and I'm going to take a look and see if I can find it on my iPhone. Sounds like a good deal, Michelle.
Yeah, it's not a setting I've used either, but I've heard about it, and it's successful for individuals, especially those who have a very large contact list, you know, letting those go through and have a lot of numbers they can't just immediately recognize. Plus, there's that spoofing out there, and this will prohibit some of that. So really, any tool that's available to individuals to use to minimize calls is a good thing. The only exception to that, or preface to that, I guess I'd like to make, is if you're using an app from an app store, that you look at that privacy policy so you fully understand, you know, whose app it is and how it's working. But they have a lot of good tools out there.
Mark in Stoddard, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question is that if these scammers are using a device that's the same equipment that any one of us can buy, why wouldn't they be able to track it and identify much in the way that, you know, how OnStar was able to kind of curtail auto theft by way of GPS tracking a vehicle, and then they were able to disable the vehicle while the thefter was driving it? Why couldn't there be some sort of something similar? Because if you have an IP address,
we lost Mark, but I think we got the gist of it. Why can't we do it like OnStar does, Michelle?
Yeah.
Any idea?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I'm not the tech wizard here by any means. It's a very tech complicated when a lot of these scam rings are coming from international call centers, going through different affiliates and methodology, using different tools along the way, borrowing or renting numbers for a short period of time and jumping around. Plus, then there is voice over internet protocol, which is harder to track. I understand he brought up the concept of an IP address, but again, these are international call centers, and so you need to be able to work with your international law enforcement partners, which the federal government does do. We have seen them crack down on some of these call center rings, but it does take time and resources to do that. So it's not just a simple track back with GPS type technology and things. So, but yeah, I get where the caller's coming from, and the federal government is all over that aspect of things in working with partners.
Mark, thanks. Rose in Menominee Falls, your turn now. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I have, I regularly unsubscribe from things, and I have tried to unsubscribe from Walgreens emails, and I was getting daily, if not multiple times a day, and three times I tried to unsubscribe online, none of which worked, and then I got a phone number, and I called them, their offices, and I did that twice, and they assured me that they would take it off, or I unsubscribe me, and they came right back on. The third time I called them, I told them what problems I was having, and I said, do I need to report this to the Consumer Protection Agency? At which time, the person on the phone said, well, okay, wait a minute, I'll go check. She came back and she said, okay, it's taken care of. Well, it seemed to be briefly or a little bit less, but it's right back on again. And it just feels like harassment. I can't unsubscribe from these.
Hmm. So, Laura?
It sounds like, it sounds like, Laura, she's done everything she can, and you should probably file a complaint. I mean, they should be unsubscribing you when requested. Now, I know that many times, if not most times, because this is automated, the message will tell you that it's not immediate and that it'll take some time for that to take place. But it sounds like that time has elapsed and you're still getting it, and you've been assured that you've been taken off and you're still getting it. And so it seems to me filing a complaint and seeing if our team can mediate it and get some real results makes good sense. Also, if you're having this problem, others are having it. And that's another reason we always encourage people to file complaints, because if you're experiencing it, there are many, many more, and it's just a way in which we can resolve what could be a process problem that affects a lot of consumers. So I would encourage you to file a complaint.
At datcp.wi.gov. There you go.
Thanks
very much, Rose, for calling us. Lara's right. There's probably other people having the same issue. Carol in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm an 80-year-old lady from Appleton that runs a small business, which is four rental units in my large, large home. Our WE Energy bills amounts to about $300 a month. And last August, I met with our banker, and she set me up on auto pay. And me, assuming that all these months I've been paying my WE Energy's bill, I really didn't look. But I got something in the mail yesterday, and I almost dropped over because it was a WE Energy's disconnect notice. And it said that I owed $3,755. And to me, that's about a year's worth. I have never once had a notice of any kind that my bill wasn't being paid. I did not look at my statement since to see what has been happening there. I'm just so upset about this. I called every number I could on there. And it took me about 4 hours. I finally connected with somebody, and I said, I have my credit card right here right now. I want to pay it in full. They said I could only pay $700 at a time. and their brochure says I could pay it in full. I am just lost and scared.
Hmm. Did you talk to the bank at all?
I have an appointment, but it took me 2 weeks to get in there, so I can't get to the bank yet.
Oh, okay. Michelle, comments?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you asked the question about the bank because I was curious what was happening with the auto pay and if you did see deductions from your accounts and where were those going. But if there weren't deductions, then something happened with that auto pay process. But that's something I think you're going to want to know and understand when dealing with We Energies to make sure that payments weren't going to them, but maybe to a different account or something and you haven't paid or overpaid. As far as their cap on payment, I'm not sure about that. Maybe that's a credit card limitation or something. And if you're able to write them a check, that may be different. There may be someone in management you can talk to. But utilities are regulated by the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. And so I think if this persists and you're not getting anywhere, filing a complaint with the Wisconsin Public Service Commission is going to be the avenue for you to try and get assistance in trying to deal with that. But what we've told individuals who were struggling to pay, not your situation, yours was a billing mix-up as far as what was happening there, but those individuals that were having difficulty paying during the pandemic and during the winter months is to pay attention. You will get notified by letter of delinquency or being behind before disconnections. And yours is being described as a legitimate process as opposed to the scam phone call that people could get threatening disconnections, to work with the utility provider as you've done on making payment arrangements. So you're taking all the steps that we would encourage a consumer to do and go through that process. But if they're not working out the way you hope, then the Public Service Commission is where we need to have you get your complaint on file.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Carol. And Judith in Burlington, we'll go to you now. Hi, Judith.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My neighbor got a call from someone that said that they were from the Social Security Administration, and you know the rest of the story. They asked her if she would verify her husband's Social Security number. They read it off, and she said, yes, that was it, and then realized that wasn't really what she should be doing. So now what should she do? I have two questions. One is, why would they call if they already have the number to verify it? That seems like not what they would do as a scam. But what should she do now to protect everything if they have his Social Security number?
Good question. Laura?
Yeah, they should call our hotline. So Social Security Administration scams are in the top three complaints that we've had last month. They've just serially been around, have not gone away, along with the We Energy scam that Michelle referenced earlier. So not surprising that your friend got the call. I would definitely, since she confirmed the Social Security number, we have an identification staff team at the department that can walk her through and her husband through what they need to do to protect their identity, whether or not they want to put a freeze on their credit, check their credit report, a variety of things that would probably be a good first step to see if anyone has already acted on the use of that Social Security number, and if not, to get some preventative measures in place so no one can take out a line of credit, anything like that. So I would encourage her to call our 800 number and get in touch with someone who can walk her through the ID theft process. And that number is 1-800-422-7128. In terms of verifying the Social Security number, it's unclear where they found the number. So making sure that it's a Social Security number and it's attached to a person, that it's a viable number and someone that they could use it, it could be just as simple as that. I'd be curious to know whether or not she gave them some of the numbers or if they have the entire thing. But if they have the entire thing, it could be purely to make sure that it's a number that's attached to a person who's still alive and they can utilize it in that way. Michelle, do you have any other thoughts on why they would be verifying the Social Security number?
Well, as you said, the scam just works of they want to verify to keep the account active. And so I think that missing thread, as you said, is did they have any of the numbers or did the consumer just start giving that because they thought it was a legitimate issue there? And what you said about, you know, making sure it's an active live account means identity theft will happen one way. Versus there is identity theft of deceased individuals, but those thieves and scam artists have to go about that in a different means, and that helps them understand the value and what they have in their hands.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you, Judith, for calling. June is recognized as Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and June 15th, I think, is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Some of the senior scams of note, I mean, we've already covered a bunch of them, Michelle, but any comments on how we can help protect our senior citizens?
Yeah, thanks for bringing a notification to this and awareness to this, Larry. It is just a time to make sure that we are taking a moment to think of our older population in Wisconsin and how they may be connected to the world, and be sure that they aren't being victimized by these scam artists. Have conversations with them instead of saying, oh, well, you know, did you get any phone calls today? You know, who'd you talk to today? Be light on the approach so they can tell their story and not be fearful of any retribution by maybe the children in questioning their decision making or anything like that. But we do have a tool for individuals. It's called our Wisconsin Senior Guide. You can get an actual hard copy of the booklet, or you can download it on a tablet or computer in PDF format. And it outlines and identifies a number of the different scams that specifically target seniors. They hit all of us. I don't want to anyone to think that we aren't all targeted by these, but they specifically target seniors with the scam we just spoke about, Social Security scam. We've talked Medicare scam today, sweepstakes, tech support, utilities, grandparent scam, where you're trying to act like you're the grandchildren and what grandparent isn't going to try and help a grandchild in need. And so that's a scam out there where they're just trying to get money. And then actually the romance scam, friend and family scam is specifically targeted to seniors as well, because there's a belief there's a big wealth of money in the pot there to target and get at with our older Wisconsin citizens here. So go ahead and get that booklet and have it be a visual reminder that sits by the phone for individuals. Have conversations that are non-threatening with our individuals so they can tell their story and you can be aware of what's happening in the household. You can call the Consumer Protection Hotline to get the senior guide, 1-800-422-7128, or go to our website and download it, datcp.wi.gov.
Well, Michelle and Laura, thank you so much. It was a great show, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Liz Freemuth will be talking about new plants to try and how to move the old ones. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.